Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM and the IC7000. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. This is Ham Nation, episode number 75, November 28th, 2012, our 75th anniversary. Good evening, everybody. From Illinois tonight, it's Ham Nation, and this is K9EID, and it's a very special show. And to help us celebrate our 75th show, we have W6TWT. Thank you.
I don't do anything small, Bob. Hey, congratulations. I can't believe it's 75 episodes. That's fantastic.
Well, we're really proud to be able to be on your network. We appreciate you being there so much. But a big part of this comes from Gordo, who I'm sorry is out teaching tonight, and the old smoke and solder guy, George Thomas. Hello, George.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Leo.
Hey,
good
George.
To see both of y'all here tonight.
Well, it's great. It's great to see you. I love smoke and solder. It's one, with all due respect, Bob, one of my favorite segments. I just really enjoy it.
Yeah, me too.
I love it. Well, I love it when you get down into it and you really start doing some stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But we're going to do some stuff tonight.
I can't wait.
It all started when we first started this show, Leo. I tried to do the first two episodes myself live, and I'm going, this isn't going to work. And I met up with George. Somebody sent me a note about this just this week. How did Ham Nation start? And maybe we'll get into that in a minute, and we'll tell you a little short history of it. But we also have a very important part of the show from Northern Illinois is Cheryl, K9BIK. She watches the chat room, and she keeps a tab on us too, Leo. Hi, Cheryl. How are you?
I'm doing real good tonight, Bob. How are you doing? This is like a really great evening to have the 75th anniversary, and you're here with us. This is great. Hi, everybody in the chat room, and great to have everybody here with us tonight.
Yeah, sorry that Gordo couldn't be here, but he's teaching this class for the Coast Guard.
Aww. And,
because the show ran late to getting the recording done, but that's okay. And Leo, if you remember, we did that triangulation show about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago.
We were in the old studio. That's how long ago it was.
Yeah, we were. And that's the first time you and I had met. We had talked a lot on the phone and email and stuff, but we had never met. And Sarah and I came there, and you found out about half your chat room were hams.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite things to watch is every Wednesday evening, the chat room transforms. People take their nicks and they add their call signs to the front of it. And all of a sudden, the chat room is just full of amateur radio operators. And it's really great to see that happen. I just love it.
Well, as I told you then, I think live on the air, we are the original geeks.
You bet.
And the first guy I called when I left the parking lot that day and we had talked about doing this show, I called Joe Walsh and I said, Joe, you got to be on the show, because I don't think you or I or anyone knew that this thing would be carried on this long. And so Joe said, yeah. And then I said, well, you got to do one more favor for me. We've been friends all these decades. You got to write and play the theme. And of course he does every week. And he checks in occasionally. But then I wanted to do this. I came up with this smoke and solder thing, and I'm going, this would be cool. We got to build stuff. And I tried doing that, and it didn't work.
You can't do it. You remember one of the first episodes you taught me how to make a dipole antenna. I still have it over here. We cut it, and we measured it and all that. That was an early edition. There was no smoking or soldering, but there was building.
I got an email from George about two after. Wasn't that right, George? How'd we get together there, George?
Yeah, I think it was after the first episode of To a Ham Nation, I sent you an email and said I enjoyed the show and congratulations. And by the way, I do a show too and just sent you a link to it. And a couple of weeks later, I think it was, I heard back from you and you said you need to come do some soldering for us.
Yeah. That's right. And here we go. And it's been a real favorite part of the show. My favorite part, I'll tell you. Because I learn a lot too, Leo. No matter how long you've been in this hobby, you always learn things. And so we're having fun with all of that. And we appreciate you and all of your staff there. I don't think a lot of the viewers know how many people it takes to put this all on. And we're appreciative. We Ham Radio, the industry, is appreciative of you and all those people and the bandwidth time. So I wanted you to stay over a few minutes here on our 75th anniversary and thank you for all that you do for amateur radio.
As somebody said, it's 75 weeks, not meters.
Absolutely. Here, here.
Congratulations. You guys, you do a great job. I love it. I love being a ham. One of these days, I'm going to have enough time to use some of these great gear that Ray Novak and ICOM has set up here for us. And I can't wait to get on and see, say hello to everybody and have a great time on the
Well, that's great. Airwaves. We'll continue on and hopefully grow the show even more. Who knows where it's going from here? But we appreciate you being with us tonight here on our anniversary show. And sorry, Gordon's not here, and all the East Coasters will do your story next week. But we are going to show Frank Farrell's video here in just a little bit. And one other thing I'm doing tonight, Leo, see all this here in the background?
Yeah, what is that?
That is my original 1956 Harvey Wells.
Wow.
And we are going to fire it up tonight. I'm going to show people how we load and tune a tube amplifier in this thing. And it all starts off with crystals. You know, we didn't have VFOs. We had crystals. And it's one of those things that you'd come home from high school to see what was in the mail because you spent your whole $15 or whatever to buy a crystal for a different frequency. And then you would collect your favorite frequencies.
Wow, look at that.
That's how you change them. And then you got to the point where you had cans of them.
Jason Sanborn cans. I don't think they make that coffee anymore, Bob.
Well, that's how long this has been around with me. I'm a nut. I save all this stuff. Sarah says all the time, you really need all... Yeah, you do. You do. But tonight, we are going to fire up the Harvey Wells and show people how we can do that from 1956. I still use it on the air. It's fun. We'll do that later. But we want to get into these videos, or this video from Frank Farrell of the East Coast. As you well know, we had some horrible, horrible times there the past month. And one of the saving factors of a lot of lives and people's with ham radio. And Frank has got a fabulous video he did. And next week, Gordon will be back, and he's got some additional slides that he did at KJI last week, the great ham radio dealer on the East Coast. And we're sorry that he couldn't stick around, but he had to go teach the class. So tell you what, Alex, you get set to roll this video. We are going to excuse you because I know you have to run, Leo. Thanks for being here. We appreciate that, and
we'll look
forward to having you again. George, you want to pass it on and say hi and bye?
7-3, Leo, and happy birthday. And by the way, that rig that Bob has back there, I think that was built the same year you and I were.
It's in a lot better shape, too. 7-3, George.
Cheryl?
Yes, I just wanted to thank Leo. Thank you for the bandwidth, Leo. We love it. We really appreciate it. And have a wonderful, wonderful birthday. And you look terrific. So have another great year coming up.
Thank you, Cheryl. 7-3.
Hey, thanks for being here, Leo. And we'll see you real soon. So let's look at some of this great video that Gordon brought back from New Jersey and how well the hams responded to Sandy.
My name is Greg Mitchell, W2MYA.
All right, Rich Green, KD2BEN.
Hi, I'm Drew Shelba, N2RFA, here in KJI Electronics. Town all my life. In fact, 69 years in the same house. In regards to the storm, we've had some bad hurricanes that I can remember over the years, but never anything like this. Ham radio definitely played a part in Sandy. With all the communications going out, we had many electrical wires down.
I live in Florham Park, New Jersey, and we had 7 days without electric. But I did have an opportunity to run the ham radio. We bought two car batteries and got this 3,000-watt inverter, and we ran the most important thing was the ham radio. Having the radio and some of the communication we had with some other areas was definitely beneficial, and that was about the only time we could talk to anybody.
During the storm, the area we're in does not have public water. It's all septic tanks and wells, so we had no electricity and no water for 5 days. We were working as a team. All the people around us on the repeaters were gathering together. I was using my ham radio to go on the local repeaters to find out where we can get gas. I stood online for 3 hours. I got to the pump. They said, that's it, it's closed. So what do you do? I got on the radio, asked, does anybody know if there's any other stations with gas? And I was able to get gas. Of ham radio, being able to get on there and say, hey, anybody know where I can get gas? And everybody was helpful and, you know, trying to help each other.
All right, that's really wonderful stuff. And you know, it's ham radio that brought so many of these people back to life, and they're, some of them will never get back to where they are, and we feel so sad that this has happened, but we're happy that ham radio can be of great help to them. And as I said, I'm sorry that Gordon is not here to report on his. He's got some wonderful slides that he prepared, and he worked all day on it, and we're really sorry that he's not here because he's out teaching the class tonight. But next week we will bring this. So be sure and come back next week, and we'll make that all happen again. And our prayers and thoughts are with all of you on the East Coast, let me tell you. Well, we want to go hear about some other news that's going on, so let's go down to New Orleans and see what Don's got with Newsline.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1841, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, November 28, 2012. Scientists at NASA's Ames Research Center have built the most affordable ham band satellite to date.
The $3,500 orbital device is a CubeSat the size of a coffee cup that uses an off-the-shelf Nexus One smartphone as a central processor and an inexpensive off-the-shelf radio for communications with the ground. Called PhoneSat One, the tiny bird is scheduled to launch by the end of this year. Once on orbit, it will transmit back photos of Earth on an amateur radio band for 10 days or until the battery dies. Subsequent iterations will be capable of much more. For example, PhoneSat 2.0 will have a two-way S-band radio transponder, which most satellites use to communicate with the ground and solar panels for extended life. At airtime, exact operating frequencies for these tiny birds has not been announced. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3 TZD in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
You'll find URLs with more information about PhoneSat 1 in the printed edition of this week's Amateur Radio Newsline. A group of top Democrats on the House Energy and Commerce Committee is calling for a hearing to be held on the effect Hurricane Sandy had on the reliability of Internet, mobile, telephone, and other communications networks. This after the massive storm whipped across the East Coast.
In a letter sent to Committee Chairman Representative Fred Upton and Communications and Technology Subpanel Chairman Representative Greg Walden, W7EQI, the Democrats emphasized that network outages put lives at risk and noted that the storm knocked out 25% of cell towers in the affected areas. They argue that a hearing would let lawmakers examine vulnerabilities found in wireless and mobile networks during the storm and help with preparation for the next one. The lawmakers said they also want to examine the performance of wireless networks during and after the storm.
Amateur Radio Newsline Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, reporting. Newly reelected Oregon Representative Greg Walden, W7EQI, says he will remain chairman of the House subcommittee that oversees communications and technology policy. In addition to his other duties, W7EQI will chair the National Republican Congressional Committee. Elected to the post by House GOP members, the National Republican Congressional Committee chairman works with House leadership to set the agenda of that body. The committee also coordinates national efforts to elect Republicans to the House. The U.S. military is launching a far-out neighborhood watch, but instead of warding off burglars, it's recruiting amateur astronomers to assist in tracking orbital debris and thereby help in avoiding possible satellite collisions in Earth orbit. The Sky Monitoring Project, called SpaceView, is a Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, program that enrolls the talents of amateur astronomers to help protect American space assets from orbital trash. These dangerous objects include spent rocket stages, defunct satellites, and fragments from other spacecraft that are the result of erosion, explosion, and collision. DARPA says that a collision between one of these small pieces of debris and a satellite could release more than 200,000 times the energy of a head-on automobile collision at 65 miles an hour. The concept of the SpaceView program is to provide more diverse data to the Space Surveillance Network. This is a U.S. Air Force program charged with cataloging and observing space junk and debris to identify potential near-term collisions. NASA estimates more than 500,000 pieces of hazardous space debris orbit the Earth, threatening satellites that, among other things, support peacekeeping and combat missions. To find out more on DARPA's SpaceView project, take your web browser to spaceviewnetwork.com. And finally this week, the United Kingdom's Wakefield and District Radio Society will be operating the special event station GB0IDD over the weekend of December 1st to the 3rd. This in celebration of the United Nations International Day of Persons with Disabilities. This United Nations-sponsored Day of Action takes place each year. Its overall aim is to raise awareness and understanding of disability issues and to promote the independence, inclusion, and choice of disabled people and their rights, abilities, and well-being worldwide. This year's theme is removing barriers to create an inclusive and accessible society for all. Operation will be mainly on 20 through 10 meters, and you should confirm this contact electronically via EQSL only. And by the way, some 30% of the Wakefield District Radio Society members are disabled in some way. We salute this effort. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73, and we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
Thanks, Don. It's always great to have your reports, and we appreciate Bill Pasternak and everybody that puts that Newsline thing together each week. I hope you're listening on your local repeaters. I hear it on 160 meters. On Saturday night, if you haven't heard those broadcasts, they're really great from Missouri. He does a great job. So you might want to look at some of the other places and listen for them. But Newsline's very helpful. I wanted to tell you guys about the ICOM 7000. You know, we're really happy to have ICOM sponsor this episode of Ham Nation each week. And we want to talk about their 7000. I have a 7000, and it's a wonderful piece. It's almost scary how good that little rascal is. It's small, but it has an incredible receiver. I've used it during some contests. I know a lot of guys take it on D expeditions because you can do this with it. The front panel comes off, and you can mount it up on your dash. I like to take this and mount it on the console here, and then put the big part down with power supply. So all you have is this, and it just works so good. And one of the things about it is it operates 100 watts on 6 meters all the way down, 160, just great. It's 50 watts on 2 meters, and you can work the repeaters and stuff like that extremely well. But the good, strong point is the DSP. It is amazing. The notch filters, the bandwidth filters, all of these filters, you don't have to buy them. They're built in, man, and you just dial them up. And one of the great things about all of the DSP in it, there's not one, there's two noise limiters. And I have never heard any of my equipment take noise out like a 7000. I don't know what they did to it, but they need to put it in a big radio. It's because it is fabulous. So we're really excited about this little compact 7000. And one other thing that's great about it, they take the most commonly used controls, and all eight of them are here, so you don't have to go into menus. There's, I don't know how many, I lose count, but it's probably 100 or more. But things like the tuner, the call, the preamp, the mode switch, noise blankers, the noise reduction, all of those things are on these, I call them fast spots, and you can get right to it quickly. And you don't have to go into a menu and look this up and rotate this. Boom, you're there. You want to turn the preamp on? It's there. So those are things that are really great. And the other thing I really like about this little jewel is this little button right here on the side. A lot of people miss that. It's a slider, and you can make this very strong and very secure to tune, or it can spin. It's like a little brake on the tuner. I like that a lot. So you want to look at some of the things that the 7000 does, and there's a lot of companies that are backing it up. That's the other side of it, is that they have a Comet, Diamond, Radio Waves, and this company that builds microphones. We build this microphone specifically for the inputs that require a little more gain. And we even call it the ICM. Can't spell ICOM any closer without getting trade problems. But the ICM is marvelous on this little thing. I have guys ask me, what are you running? And they think I have some big monster radio with a rack of equipment. No, I don't. I have a 7000, and away you go. It's just really great. So you guys want to check out the 7000. And just make sure you visit that website that Alex brought up a little bit ago. And it's icomamerica.com/hamnation. You want to go check that out and get this little all-mode wonder called the IC7000. And we'll look for you on one of the bands, the many bands that the IC7000 covers. So we'll talk to you then with your 7000. It's really good. Really good. Well, George, I want to ask you a question. Do you know, my friend, what in the world I would have this and this for in my Radio Shack? And it isn't to brush my teeth.
Oh, gee. Yeah, that's right. There's no video there, so you wouldn't need it for that. I bet you use that for cleaning contacts with, Bob, but that's just a guess.
You might not have been around long enough to know how we did this. Remember those little wonderful crystals I showed you a while ago?
Yeah.
That we changed all these frequency with? Well, okay. You know, you do your paper route and you bought your crystal for the week, and then you found out your buddies moved a couple of KCs up the band. Now what do you do? Well, here's what you do. You take the top off of your crystal, you pull this out of here carefully, and you get to the crystal. And the crystal, of course, is that little guy. and you take a little toothpaste and you take your toothbrush and you can raise the frequency a little bit just by putting a little toothpaste on your crystal. You put it back in the holder, you put it back together, you plug it in your radio, bingo, and you can get it centered on frequency. And that's what you use that for.
So is that a permanent thing, Bob? I mean, once you raise the frequency, is it there?
Oh, it's there. Yeah. You're not coming back. Ain't going to happen. But those are some of the things we did in the early days. And guess what? There are still guys doing it. And I thought we'd have some fun tonight. I talk a lot about some of this old gear I have. Well, tonight, we are going to fire this baby up. Other question I have, George. Do you know what this is? And it's not a... I know it's a light bulb. What would I do with it?
I guess that's your dummy load for tuning up.
Exactly. There might be two dummies on the screen here of me and the light bulb, but this one is the intelligent one. Yes. Back in the days, and I still do it, use light bulbs for dummy loads. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put it back here in the dark, because if I put it out here, it doesn't work very well. And I hope I still have some audio. And we're going to put it back here in the dark. I think you'll be able to see all this. I tried this a while ago, and we'll see what's happening. You hear me okay, George? We still making it?
You're still there, Bob.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to move the camera slowly up to my wonderful, wonderful Harvey Wells. And I've had this since 1956. I've had several of them, but this is the original. And this one's kind of special because instead of just using a crystal, which is set, and you're not going to change the frequency. Oh, you can a little bit, like I showed you a minute ago. But then they came up with a variable frequency oscillator, and you unplug the crystal and you plug in the VFO. So away we go. We're ready to fly. Now, you selected the band. We're going to put this thing on 20 meters. And the first thing you had to do was get some grid drive. And what that did, it drove the grid of the tube of the 807. This had an 807 final in it. And then you had to tune and load the plate and the load controls. The plate is a condenser that tunes the final. This is the load that works the reactance to the antenna. It's almost like a little antenna tuner. Okay, let's fire this baby up and see what happens. First of all, we're going to get some grid drive going. Uh-oh. Can you see the light, George? Did it come on? Now, watch what happens.
I believe it did.
Okay. Now, I can increase the load, and you increase it just a little bit, and then you have to tune. We call it dip. You'll notice the light's getting brighter. Now, we're going to increase the load a little bit more, bring a little more antenna onto the thing, and now we have to tune it up a little more. And what's interesting about that is you think, okay, well, we can go more and more. Well, no, if you go past that, it reduces the output. So you want to look at that maximum match of 50 ohms. That's what we're trying to do, 50 ohms between the antenna and the final plate tank. And this resonates the plate tank. And we'll go back and check our grid drive. Yeah, we're doing good. And away we go. One other thing, I can go down to the power supply. And we can plug on the old high voltage. What happens there is we've increased the high voltage a little bit. And now we're getting about 60 watts out of it. How do I know that, George?
You put your tongue on the light bulb?
Well, that's a 60-watt light bulb, and it's full brilliancy. And this is part of the fun of what we did years ago, tuning and making all this stuff happen. Then we plug in a microphone,
And as we talk, you will notice, hello, AM, the peaks will increase. And those peaks are sometimes double, of course, with the input power. But as you talk, hello, 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 you have wonderful, wonderful audio, AM audio from the old Harvey Wells and an 807. We've got some slides if you want to run those quickly for us, Alex, and let everybody see what's going on with the old Harvey. I've got some of the inside of it, too. So let's take a look at those slides.
Stand by, Bob. I don't see the slides, but we'll try to get them.
Oh, okay. No problem. No problem. The really cool thing about the Harvey Wells is it was small. Now, you ready for this, George? I had this transmitter in a 1957 Ford Ranchero pickup truck.
Wow.
Now, I didn't have the VFO. I had just the crystal. And I used it on 6 meters in my dad's new Ranchero. You know, there was plenty of room under the dash. And how did I get 450 volts for the plate and 250 volts for the screen? It was a dynamotor. And this dynamotor was mounted just like a water pump in your car. There was an extra belt on it. It was great stuff. But that's what we did back in 1956, 58, 60. And it was just great old stuff. The receiver was even crazier. The receiver was a converter that hooked to the side of your steering column, and it was a converter that converted the AM radio to the band that you wanted to work on. Oh, wow. My goodness. Were we crazy or what? Yeah, but we were hams. And as I've said to many people, and a lot of the talks I give and lectures and then all the many club meetings that we do via Skype, ham radio is, it's my college education, and this is some of it, learning all of these things. And we'll try to get those slides up after a while and show you the inside of this little baby. But it was just so much fun in those days, and I learned so much. And what year did you get into to the hobby, George?
Well, I got in broadcasting in 1972, but I didn't actually become a ham until 1991, so I've never played with a Harvey Wells before, or in that matter, any tube type HF rigs. Got tube type linears, of course, but I have not had to deal with it in a transceiver before. And I've worked on plenty of high power transmitters for broadcast that had monster tubes in them. And you know, there were some radio stations that actually used light bulbs as a dummy load, but they couldn't get away with just 160 watt one.
I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so, but we did it because we didn't have SWR bridges. We didn't care. We didn't know. We just tuned it up and see who could hear us, but things got a little more sophisticated. Well, speaking of sophistication, let's get serious about this and see what happens about making smoke and solder. So let her fly, George.
Well, Bob, you know, sometimes things don't go exactly as you'd planned, and that's the reason that we have the solder wick and ways of desoldering things. So first, I've got a little video here that explains a little something you might want to check if you're building that soft rock along with us at home.
Danger, Bill Robinson, danger.
If you were listening to me last week on Smoke and Solder, and instead of following the instructions at the website, you might have a problem with your soft rock. Fortunately, John Kennedy was paying attention and noted two things that I made a mistake on here. On L2, L3, L4, and T5, I gave you the right numbers for the cores, but I told you the wrong size. A T37 core is actually 5/16 of an inch wide instead of a quarter inch wide, and a T25 core is actually a quarter inch wide instead of 5/16. So you may need to go back and check those and make sure you got them right. Also, for L2 and L3, I use the wrong color of wire. It should be the green wire. This is the kind of things that happen when you're in a hurry and you're trying to video yourself. There's evidence after the crime. One other thing to note, the same problems exist with L4 and T5. If you've got the wrong core sizes there, you'll want to check those. And one other note came along to me from another ham in the Netherlands, Ferry, PD9FER, and he found an article on the internet that says transformer T6 is causing a re-radiation problem on the USB cable. And this is due to a design flaw in the board, so you either need to swap the pair of wires on the primary or the pair on the secondary to correct that issue. And future revisions of this board should have that problem taken care of, but the version that's out there right now, you'll need to swap one of those sets of leads. So there you go. Even I make mistakes, and all of us do, and that's how we learn. When something doesn't work right, you go back and look for what you did wrong. But in this case, somebody else found it and pointed me in the right direction. So if you've been building along, check those cores to make sure you've got the right size there. Now, last week, and I don't know how many of you were paying attention, I said that I would be doing a magic trick with solder this week that had never been seen before on internet television. So let's see how it turned out. Last week on Smoke and Solder, I promised that I would attempt a magic trick this week, and that's exactly what we're going to do. That's right, I'm going to solder aluminum. Now, I needed some aluminum, and I went to looking for some old project boxes, and this is all I could come up with here. This is an old fuzz tone that I built back in the 1970s. I probably stole the circuit from one of Craig Anderton's books. It still works, I guess. I haven't used it in years. It never was that good. It says hot tube on it, but it sounded very little like a tube-type fuzz box. So what I'm going to do here is just take this little piece of aluminum angle, and for no good reason, I'm going to solder it right here to this cabinet. I had never heard of soldering aluminum before until I ran across this article and a book, and I thought I would give it a shot. So there's a couple of things we're going to need here. Number one, of course, we're going to need some solder, and I'm just using some standard lead solder here. We're going to need a soldering iron, and I'm using my old Weller 140-watt gun here. We're going to have to clean this metal good, and for that, and we want to make it a little abrasive on there, too, so I'm using some Scotch-Brite to kind of polish that up and rough it up. We're also going to need a little denatured alcohol to clean it with. And I have a very old bottle of Valvoline 5W30 motor oil. I suspect you could use other grades of motor oil. Your mileage may vary. So let's get started here. The first thing we'll do is clean the materials. And that looks like it'll probably be good right there. And that looks pretty good as well. We're going to clean it off with a little bit of denatured alcohol. It's got to be really clean here. And we don't want to touch these with our fingers once we've cleaned them. And now, the magic part. Of course, you know, if we're going to solder metal like this, the first thing you want to do is tin it. Now, how in the world are you going to tin aluminum? The problem is when you try to heat up aluminum, it rapidly oxidizes, and that's going to prevent your solder from sticking to it. So the way we're going to try to work around that is use a little bit of the motor oil here, and we'll put a little film of that on the aluminum, and hopefully this will protect it from air and stop the oxidation. And there we've got a small film. And now we'll take our soldering iron, and we need to clean the tip on it before we really get started, because there's always junk on there. Let me use this little tip cleaner here. It has some of that copper steel wool stuff Bob was talking about last week. I haven't tried one of these before. It seems to do pretty good. It's the first one I've ever had. And now we'll start heating the metal here. And then we'll try to flow a little solder in there. Now, aluminum is going to dissipate the heat really quick, so this could take some time to do. And we need to just kind of rub it around. Try to spread out the heat a little. And the box is beginning to get a little warm. You can see that the heat is being dissipated so quickly that the iron's not really wanting to stay hot enough. All we're really able to do is just make a little bead of solder there. Nothing seems to be sticking. I may be trying too large a piece of aluminum here. I don't know about this. I think we'll probably burn off whatever motor oil we had there by now. Chipped right off. So, no good there. Let's try the first one that we did. That one chipped right off, too. So, no luck on that one. I think the box was just too big. Okay, let's give this another shot on the aluminum angle here. Hopefully, we're going to do better. I could definitely tell by having a smaller piece of aluminum here that it was not dissipating the heat as quick, and the metal was getting hot enough, and I could actually melt the solder. This one seems to have turned out fine. Let's just see if this would be suitable for soldering a wire to a piece of aluminum. Piece of copper wire soldered to aluminum. Now let's try to pull that off. Actually, the copper's coming loose out of the solder and not the solder off the aluminum. So we did have some success here. I think maybe with some experimenting you could do a little better here. I'm not sure how much better. So to answer the age-old question, can you solder aluminum? The answer is a definite maybe. So there you go. I didn't know if it would work or not, but there's the proof. And I was pulling pretty hard on that piece of wire when it pulled up there. But this thing actually stuck, Bob. I couldn't believe it. What do you think?
Well, I thought it was great myself. And you sent me that video, and I'm going, is this going to work? And I've never heard of this before, so how cool. That's wonderful. So I think you got it. So you are a magician.
Well, a little bit of one. I couldn't do the big box. I think, you know, that was just too much aluminum to try to heat up. And by the time I got it warm enough, I had melted off all my oil. So we'll have to try that again. But, you know, this might be good for some small things that you want to do, like soldering a piece of wire to an antenna or something like that. So I'll definitely be giving it another shot.
Okay. I'm going to be watching and listening. Hey, did anybody find out what that was on my shirt that Ashley and Michelle gave me for my birthday?
Well, that's a good question, Bob. And yes, we did have a winner. We did not have many entries, so there were apparently a lot of people confounded that didn't want to enter. But I think we had about only 15 entries on this. And the winner was Stuart WB6RXG. And he said, it certainly looks like a tube-type regenerative receiver to me. Now, I don't know if that's a regenerative receiver or not, but I think you and I both decided that's some kind of receiver, didn't we, Bob?
Yeah. And I think it's a regen. You'll see over on the right side of that schematic, that's the regen control.
Oh.
And that definitely is. And, of course, the earphones to listen. Yep, that's what she is. So congratulations. Hopefully you can build one someday and bring it on the show with us and make it happen. That'd be cool. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I've actually built a solid-state one. That MFJ shortwave receiver I built was a regen, but I need to do a tube-type one one day. So congratulations, Stuart. You win the MFJ telescopic antenna for shortwave and scanner use, or even your 2-meter or 440 handy-talkie. Next week, we're going to give away a copy of Morse Code Breaking the Barrier, which teaches the Koch method. And this was written by Dave Finley, N1IRZ. And it's courtesy of MFJ. Now, if you'd like to win that, and if you're interested in code, you should like to win it because that's a good book, and I think it'll give you some pointers in there. Riddle me this. Why can't you normally solder aluminum? What's the process that's going on that prevents the aluminum from taking the solder, unless you use the motor oil? So send your answer to hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And you could win the book.
Oh, man, you get your questions are harder all the time.
Yeah. Well, I think this one will be easier than last week's. Boy, that was a tough one, I know, for a lot of people. But very interesting. And I'm surprised that you can buy a shirt like that. You know, somebody actually came up with that idea.
Yeah, there you go. You can buy anything like that today. Silk screen's a wonderful thing. Hey, yeah. While you were showing us how to solder aluminum, I pulled my converter. I forgot. I got the converter here. This is what you attach to the side of your steering column, and this all plugged into the radio. And, of course, your antennae come up here. And you would switch it back and forth to whatever you wanted as far as your antenna switch. And that's where the broadcast antenna went for listening. You used the broadcast antenna to listen, used some kind of a crazy antenna for transmitting. But that converted the radio, your AM radio, to wherever. We could go to 75. We got 75, 40, 20, 15, and 10. This converts 1,000 KCs to all those bands. Was that cool or what?
That's very cool.
It's your mobile rig right there. You think you could get that in your smart car?
No, I doubt your smart car would run the dynamotor.
No, that's for sure. Talking of contests, I need to tell everybody that Michelle, our media gal started a new contest on our sites today. Go to the HeilSound.com and sign up to Facebook because they're giving away several microphones and headsets. I don't even know what all because I didn't get the time to check it out. But go to Facebook and just all you got to do is sign into our Facebook pages. There's two of them, one on the ham radio side, one on the pro side. And need to do that because we do contests there and they just started one. I think it was today, yesterday or today, but go sign up to the Facebook pages, and who knows, you might win a microphone or two or whatever. That'd be cool. That'd be cool. While the guys are getting warmed up on 7268 and 14268, I noticed Al just signed in a while ago, and I think Mike's around, and Bill's probably down there. We're going to go back up to Northern Illinois and see what's going on in the chat room. So, what's happening, Miss Cheryl?
Hi there, Bob. Yeah, they've been pretty inquisitive, actually, today. So it's going to be hard to pick and choose. I'm not sure what the time limitation is here. But let's see here. Bob, what are you using for a speaker with that ICOM 7000?
Oh, I use my JBL speakers. That's all I use anymore. I use... either the Control P powered one, or I got a regular Control 2. I don't use anything but JBL speakers. They're just marvelous because they have a tweeter and a woofer, and a tweeter gives you that articulation. I hate things that are mushy, and when you
you listen to a lot of this stuff today, you lose all that top end. So you have a difficult time of understanding, was it an F or an S or a P or a B? If you have a tweeter, it helps you do that. So I, most of the times I'll use these near field monitors from JBL. I mean, they're like the regular speaker without the power is $90 for 150. You can buy a pair of them with 35 watt amps in each one. So it's a really cool deal. That's what I use for all my stuff.
Way to go. Excellent. Thank you for that. And also, VE3MIC Mike asks, what's that orange square in the middle for of that piece of equipment that you have right behind you? You were talking about that amp. So what is a square? Is that just a piece of paper? Or is that a, you know, a destruct button or something?
Oh, no, that's a very important piece of paper. Oh, man. It's, I don't want to mess it up here, but I was going to take it out. It tells you what channel. Channel 1 is 3.5 to 4 megs, and it tells you what crystal range you're going to use. Let's take 20 meters is channel 3. That's where we were. And that's 14 to 14.4, and it's a 3,500 to 36 meg crystal. So it's the frequency chart, the channel, where to put the channel, and what frequency is the crystal. In this case, of course, it's the VFO.
Perfect, perfect. And I want to move over to George. I've got like three in a row for him. Are you ready, George?
Give me your best shot.
All right. First off, in regards to the 706 versus the ICOM 7000, ask George about how well the filtering and noise blanker works. Is that the 706 is better or the 7000 is better? I'm kind of confused. Which one?
Well, I've never had a 706. I do have a 7000. And I can tell you that everything Bob told you a moment ago about it is true, regardless of whether or not ICOM is a sponsor of the show. I've actually found that yes, all of that stuff is true. And I'm just really blown away. I had another major brand of HF receiver in my mobile or HF transceiver previously, and a real popular one. But when I put the 7000 in there, I was just amazed at the difference. And the noise blanker works extremely well in it because I'm driving an old Ford Expedition, and those things have 8 coil packs on them, one for each spark plug. And I've had some of those go bad, and I finally, rather than, you know, pay a mechanic $200 or $300 to replace them, I can go buy one for $40 and stick in there from the auto parts store. But I don't think they have the resistive element in it that the original Ford ones did. They cannot connect to the spark plugs a lot better, which I think was the problem with the old ones. But they don't have that resistive element in there. And when I turn off the noise blanker on that rig, I have such horrendous spark plug noise coming in that it is unusable. I hit that noise blanker, and it completely goes away. And same thing with the DSP. It works great on there, too. So I am very impressed. I think the 706 is a good rig, too, from everything I've heard, but I've just never had one myself.
Very good. Great. And let's move on to question number two here from a person in the chat room that did not sign in with the call sign, so we won't go with the web number. That's not going to mean anything. He says, ask George what those blue-looking things are hanging on the wall. It looks like electric insulators. So what are those blue things?
Yeah, these over here, that's exactly what they are. These are some, and I don't know if this one's got the name, Hemingray. Insulators. This is a number 42. You know, you used to see the lines run up and down beside the railroad track that had all those wires on there, I guess, for their telegraph systems. Mm-hmm. My little brother used to work for the railroad a number of years back. He worked on a rail detection car where they would go out over the tracks and test for cracks and stuff like that. And when they were tearing all these lines down and doing away with them, he went and got a bunch of poles and a bunch of the old insulators. So there's a huge pile of these at my folks' house. And there must be like 6 or 7 different varieties of insulators in there. And I just grabbed some when I was up there over the Thanksgiving holidays and brought them back.
Very nice. They make a nice accent piece for the back wall there. And moving on to the serious question, the technical question, George. So if I had the drum roll, I'd add that. But you're the guy with the sound effects. But W4FT. W4FT, he says, okay, guys, here's a serious question. I just remembered that I kept an aging output tube from a local AM radio station. They were aging, and it was time to rotate new tubes in. Do you think they'd make a really rugged final for a linear? With the power cut way down, of course.
Depends on how aging they were. I've seen some stations that religiously change them out. I'm assuming these came out of an AM plate modulated transmitter. I don't know that, but let's say it did. Generally, we used to change those out every year. You know, there were four tubes in there. There were two for the final RF amplifier and two for the modulator. And what we did every year, and is no longer required yearly now, but we would do a proof of performance on that station where you go out and you take an oscillator and a distortion analyzer and all, and you actually measure the frequency response and the harmonic distortion on the transmitter. And if your tubes were a year old, you would never pass. So every year we would replace the two modulators there, and we'd take the old pair of modulators and move them over to the finals. And then the old finals, by then, were 2 years old, so we just stuck them on the shelf as backups in case we needed them. So they were, you know, they're kind of weak at that point. They probably still work, but, you know, you wouldn't be able to get full power out of them, and they might have a little distortion to them. I would say they would, you know, you could use them, but they wouldn't be in tip-top shape.
Okay, thanks for that answer there. And last here, I just want to know if anyone's heard of the quartzite. Uh-oh.
Sorry about that.
You still have a connection here? I had a little bit of an echo there.
That was coming from Bob. I think he was giving us some feedback.
Okay, I'll go over that again. We had Rory. He wanted to know if anyone could make mention about the quartzite ham RV trip. Is anyone familiar with that? Bob?
Yeah, Gordo goes to that every year. And next week, Gordo will be back with us, and he can go all through that because he had some really great film and stuff. I think that's going to air next week with him, too. I think he's got some video of that. So he'll be back next week with all of this stuff from the East Coast. We apologize for him not being here this week because he had to go teach the class because we started late. But he'll be back next week, Cheryl, so we'll get that going, make it all happen.
Sounds great. Then everybody will have to come back next week. We'll look for you then. Please check in with Ham Nation for that answer. And we really want to have the Bob Heil answer to this one. W6ICL, Ira, he's a regular in the chat room. He goes, ask Bob what adapter cable I need to connect the HM12 to the ICOM ID-880H, as in hotel.
Well, there again, it's on the website. You can find it there, but it's just a regular one of our modular connectors, and best to check the website, and you can see that right there. It's probably a CC1IM, and that should work okay. Good stuff. All right. I think they've got those slides ready, too, so if you got one more, Cheryl, we'll take it, and then we're going to jump back and grab those slides they had.
Okay. Here's just a quick one that KB6YAF Russell I just wanted to, it was an RF printout that's behind me. There's like this little thing with the, I don't know if you can see this back there, but somebody asked about that, where that came from. And on the actual poster itself, it says Richard Bell Associates. It's just some sort of radio frequency fields beyond this point may exceed the FCC general public exposure limit. It says notice. And obey all posted signs and site guidelines for working in radio frequency environments. So it's about the FCC Commission Rules on Radio Frequency Emissions, 47 CFR. But it was Richard Bell Associates makes that they asked. So that's it for now, and I'll turn it back over to you, Bob. Have a great time. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for keeping us updated on the chat room. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week. And we'll go from there. All the chat room guys, appreciate you guys and gals being there. And Alex, if you got those slides, just run those here at the end real fast. This is the inside of that Harvey Wells. There's the 807. To a lot of guys, 807 was their pet name for a famous bottle of Budweiser.
And 807 was good for, oh, sometimes about 60, 80 watts and 160 meters all the way up to 10 and 6 meters. This was the RF section of that side. And this was the heart of the transmitter. It was very strange the way it was built because it was vertical. The other side of it, there's the front panel where we were playing a while ago, and that's that orange chart in the middle told us what crystals, what band, and so on. We were on band 3, which was 20 meters, and you can select either the VFO or the crystal. And then this is the modulator. Now, look at this. This is where it really shined. That thing had a pair of six V6s originally on the original Harvey Wells. Then they come out with the Harvey Wells Senior, which this one is. That's a pair of six L6s driven by a 12AX7 and the preamp and the Interstate AU7s. That thing had a lot of audio. I love the audio in these old Harvey Wells. Was the modulator for it. That's the back panel where the power supply hooked up to, and this is 450 volts and 250 volts, and that's a dropping resistor that dropped that 450 down for the screens. Guess what the output was on it? It was for, you can see the ground lug and then the insulator. That was for open wire feeders, or you could use little RCA. There's the plug. There's for the power supply. There's the VFO that connects back up and grabs that. You could do all kinds of different things with the power that was on the back, the relays, and a switch audio, and so on. And that power supply is separate. It's very heavy. It's down here on the floor, and that that baby put out about 450 volts. Actually, it puts out about 600 volts. Nice heavy transformer and choke, but the other one was a modulation transformer. So all the audio would go down through that. And what a great piece. I just love that old baby. And keep them going. That's the main thing. We have to keep them going because once in a while they decide to quit working. But so far, this has original tubes. Everything in it is original. But I take care of it. As you can see, it's very nice. And got a couple of them. So one of these days, we'll get this on the road and let other people enjoy the great Harvey Wells, because they're kind of rare to find, especially ones of work.
Hey, Bob, I got a question on that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I've got a question on that. I noticed down there where you hooked in the VFO, where the crystals would normally go, that looks like an old antenna jack with 300-ohm twin lead coming out. Is that what they fed that with to the VFO?
Only a broadcast engineer would catch that. Yes, it is. Exactly. That was what they used to have on the back of televisions. Same plug right there. It comes out of the VFO, and you plug it right in the crystal socket. How about that one?
That's something.
So cool. So cool. Well, we better head out of here. Before we go, I want to invite all of you to go find your current issue of CQ Magazine. The reason is that Riley Hollingsworth, who used to be with the FCC, has written an entire article about Ham Nation, and it's in this current issue of CQ Magazine. So let's all go out and find it. CQ Magazine sold on your magazine shelves. It's one of the few amateur radio magazines that does that. So get you a copy of CQ and you'll read all about some of the things that are happening here on the show. We're very happy to have Leo here on our 75th anniversary. Sorry that Gordo had to leave early, but due to the show running late because of the recording that was done in the studio, he'll be back next week with his great report from New Jersey and New York. And we'll be listening on 7268 or somewhere around there. As you well know, sometimes there's broadcast shows that come up and all kinds of other whatever. So Michael, move that around a little bit. So move around 2030 KCs. You'll find them, and we'll look for them. And 14268 and then the D-Star Nets. And where else will we find everybody, George?
Yeah, on the DStarNet, that's Reflector 14 Module C, or listen with your web browser at WX480X.com/listen. And EchoLink is on the Star Dewdrop and Star Conference server, and that's node number 355-800. Bob, I've enjoyed it. We've had a great show, even if Gordon couldn't make it. But, boy, being out 2 weeks, I think next week everybody's going to be glad to have him back in here.
It'll be great. And I want you to see, I have a crystal that's on 7039. So I better start going like crazy so I can get it 7268. And we'll see if we can check in the net.
It's a lot of work.
You'll be able to move it that far. 73, everybody. Cheryl, George, and of course, Leo, we appreciate you being here. And Gordon, we'll see you next week, buddy. It's so terrible that you weren't here to give us our report, but we know that you will be here next week with some great pictures and reports from New York and New Jersey. So we'll see you on the bands. Pass the word about Ham Nation. Just put Ham Nation into Google, and you can see all of the 75 programs that we have been so blessed to have the honor to put forth to you here on the TWIT Network. We'll talk to you a little high, little low, but we'll be there. 73, this is K9EID.